Welcome to Novelist Spotlight. This is Mike Consul, your host. In addition to being the host of this podcast and interviewing novelists, I am a novelist myself. I have three published novels. My latest is titled Lolita Firestone, a supernatural novel, and it is set in Sedona, Arizona and Cairo, Egypt. My previous novel is titled Family Recipes, a novel about Italian culture, Catholic guilt, and the culinary crime of the century. And my first novel is named Hardwood, a novel about college basketball and other games young men play. And that story deals with issues ranging from depression and racism to sex, religion, and university politics. All three novels are listed in the episode notes. I hope you will buy them, I hope you will read them, and I hope you will thoroughly enjoy them. Now, on with our program.
My guest is Daniel Krauss. He is the man in the spotlight during this episode. Daniel Krauss is a New York Times bestselling writer of novels, TV programs, film. His collaborations with legendary filmmaker George Romero, think in terms of The Living Dead, which they collaborated on, was acclaimed by the New York Times and Washington Post. With Guillermo del Toro, he co-authored The Shape of Water. I think we all saw that movie. It was something else. It was based on the same idea. The two had created the Oscar-winning film, and also with Del Toro, he co-authored Troll Hunters, which was adapted into an Emmy Award-winning Netflix series. His book, The Death and Life of Zebulon Finch, was named one of Entertainment Weekly's top 10 books of the year. He has awards and honors too numerous to mention right now, but Daniel Krauss's work has been translated into more than 20 languages. He lives in the Windy City of Chicago with his wife. He's got a lot of books out there, so we're not going to hit on all of those books. So you can look in the episode notes to see his URL to his website, which will give you the rundown of everything there. Daniel Krauss, welcome to the program.
Hey, hi. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you taking the time. Now, you made the cover of the New York Times book review with Whale Fall, your latest book, highly reviewed. I'm going to ask you, why do you think it made the cover of the book review? Obviously, it was a really well-received book, but are there any other factors that you thought about that you were thinking maybe this is why the New York Times Book Review, which I've subscribed to for many years, decided Whale Fall should go on the cover? Did you get any, and maybe the reviewer, Cyril Lyle, did she talk to you at all?
No, I mean, everything I've ever heard about the New York Times Book Review is just absolute confoundment and mystery. I don't think anyone has any idea how they do anything, and that's probably the way they like it. I didn't the slightest idea they were even reviewing it, much less putting it on the cover. And that has always been the case with the Times. Like, they are very church and state. They're very secretive. I don't mean that in a bad way necessarily. They just, mm-hmm. they do what they do, and they don't seem to, have any influences or show their hand, really. That's been my experience. So it was as much a surprise to me as to anyone.
I also subscribe to the New York Times Book Review podcast, which were you interviewed on the podcast? Even though I listened to it, I don't remember everybody who was on there. Were you interviewed over Whale Fall or at any other point in the past?
I don't think I was, but I think they did an episode on Whale Fall, maybe.
Where they discussed it, but you weren't there being
interviewed. I did so many during the tour that I can't say for sure, but I don't think I was on the New York Times podcast.
I get it. So Whale Fall, whale swallows man by accident, was going after other marine life that the whale subsists on. Human beings that do not interest whales, there's no nutritional value is my understanding, and just assume it would spit the guy out. Daniel, I'm going to ask you, just go ahead and give a summary of the, you'll do a better job of that than I do. Give a summary, give a teaser on Whale Fall, kind of the whole premise, without any spoilers.
Sure. So we have a diver, a young man named Jay, and he's, diving to find the remains of his father, Mitt, who had cancer and threw himself off a boat in a place called Monastery Beach in California, because he was sort of a man of the sea. He was a troubled person in a lot of ways and made Jay's life a living hell. But he wanted to die in the waters that he loved and not in a hospital room. And during that final year, because they were very estranged, Jay never visited him in the hospital. So partly to kind of make up for that, and partially to just hopefully he'll get his family to forgive him, he goes out in this dive just to see if he can find any of his dad's remains, and he ends up getting swallowed by a sperm whale, which sounds like something out of Jonah and is, but is something I worked with whale scientists for a long time to make sure was entirely theoretically possible and scientifically accurate as far as we can make it. And so he spends the rest of the book fighting to try to get out of the whale. And while he's inside, and he only has 1 hour of air left in his tank, he begins to hallucinate, if you want to take that view of it, or maybe it's really happening, that the whale has sort of absorbed his father who died in these waters. And he begins speaking to the whale as if the whale is his dad. And, his dad had given him all this advice, and, he had drilled into him all these facts about the sea and the sea life and how to survive. So somewhere in his brain is the knowledge he needs to get out of the whale. But to find that knowledge, to remember it, he's going to need to sort of deal with his relationship with his dad.
Got you. And that's like one of the keys is that you mentioned you talk to whale ecologists, scientists, what have you, and it sounds on the surface a little far-fetched, but in reality, I mean, reality is that you actually can be swallowed by a whale, and that you deal with things like the whale having multiple stomachs and so on during it. You've written a lot of on a lot of interesting topics. So when somebody meets you who doesn't know you and just says, "What do you do for a living?" You say, "I'm a novelist," or "I'm a writer, and I've written novels." If they ask you what kind of novels you write, what's your elevator statement on that one?
I mean, if they're just a regular sort of person I meet and they're not someone who is a close associate of mine, and it's really just sort of a cocktail hour chat or someone at the grocery store or whatever, and we're just making small talk, I'll just say the only thing that non-readers will understand. I'll say it's something like, oh, it's sort of in the vein of Stephen King or something, which isn't really accurate at all, but sort of transmits an idea so they have a sort of very vague sense that I'm writing things that are a little darker, things that are at least touch upon various genre elements. I don't think that Stephen King and I have much in common, but it's like that's sort of the easiest answer that gets me out of this small talk conversation. If you're dealing with people who are interested in reading or the arts, I might have a more, nuanced response.
What might that be?
Well, I would say that I've always tried to cultivate my brand as being having no brand. So it's always a little bit of a tough one. So I might say that. I say that
So
I
you don't
write
see yourself as a genre writer. For instance, some people say I'm a detective novelist, or I'm a legal thriller novelist, or sci-fi novelist.
No,
You don't want to necessarily be pigeonholed in that way.
I do think I'm a genre writer. It's just the genres are always switching. So I think it's not incorrect to say that I write novels that usually at least touch upon horror. Sometimes I've written straight up horror novels. I've written novels that are horror crossed with something else. I've written novels that aren't horror at all, but use sort of horror iconography in some way. So it's not wrong to use the word horror. Even Wellfall, which is, you wouldn't necessarily or not everyone would categorize it as horror. You certainly could. So it's a tougher answer for me than I think it is most writers I know. But I would say I'm a genre hopper who tends to write darker things. And there's a pretty big spectrum of darkness. I've written things for kids, and then I've written things that are, quite disturbing, that are far more extreme.
So, when you talk about genre hopping, there, I think a lot of writers would worry that they're losing a portion of their audience. That, I've kind of got known for one particular novel or a chain of novels. Now I'm making a jump. I understand why you would do that. I think, being a strict genre writer can get to be a little bit monotonous, perhaps, but you obviously have a vivid imagination. You have a lot of different ideas. Do you have fear at all, or do you have any sense that you sometimes lose your a part of your reading audience because it's kind of like, well, I'm just not gonna, I'm not into this particular subject?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I lose audiences all the time. Like I'll swerve so hard to the left sometimes that I have no doubt that somebody who likes book A then reads book B and they're just like, whoa, this isn't what I thought this guy did at all. I heard a report on it was on some NPR show recently, and it was some study about maybe it was on the media, but it was some study about I think it was specifically about novels, but they were applying it to any art, that in the short term, doing the same kind of thing over and over is going to help your career. But in the long term, broadening it up as much as possible is going to help. So I have inadvertently followed that pattern where I think my first, I'd say out of 20 some books now, my first four, I would say, were pretty down the center, kind of literary horror. And then from that point on, I've gone a million different directions. And I think maybe that has worked, that I kind of got a foothold and then started making all my left turns. Now, I think I lose audience people all the time, but I think I gain some too. When I write a book in a new subgenre or something, I'm going to find people too. But it is, I'm sure that I would have had about a much easier career had I just written sort of, I'm just going to write straight up horror novels. And it would have been so much easier on everyone. But I just can't do it. Like, I get bored so easily that the only thing keeping me going is the promise that the next book I write is nothing like the one I'm writing. And every once in a while, you get a book like Wellfall that straddles so many genres and nobody knows where to file it or where to stack it on the shelves. And sometimes that's really bad for a book. And every once in a while, it's really good for a book because it sort of draws everyone. So I got lucky with Wellfall, but it doesn't always work for sure.
But you've managed to be a best-selling author, despite, jumping around here. That's an interesting report. I've never heard that report before, but it's interesting, and I think it makes sense. What about your reading audience? How well do you know your reading audience? Because I was going to ask you to characterize who Daniel Krauss's readers are. It sounds like, based on what you said, that might be a little difficult, but what do you think?
I don't, yeah, it's really hard. I don't know. I think I have different groups. And the nice thing about that is if somebody, I meet someone, or if they're another writer and they haven't read my stuff, I can sort of pick something for them that I think they'll like, rather than sort of saying, oh, you're just not going to like my books. So I think I have groups of different writers, and I've written for, like I said, I've written for middle grade kids and YA and graphic novels and comics. And so it's just like, I don't know. And I've never concerned myself much with it. I think if I did, again, I would have foxed myself into a corner of, oh, if I think this is my audience, then I'm gonna have to write, I'll be more wanting to write something they're gonna like. And instead I've gone the opposite direction. and have just written what I wanted to write. And it hasn't always worked. I mean, I've had some bestsellers, but I've had some worse sellers too. Books that just didn't find their audience. That could partially be because I keep changing it.
Well, and you just answered a question that had come to my mind while you were talking, and that is, who do you write for? Do you write for yourself, or do you write for your audience? It sounds like you write for yourself, and where, the outcome is the outcome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've always written for myself. Like my early works, and I've said this in interviews before, but when I was writing my first like novellas and novels in middle school and high school, it never even occurred to me to show them to anyone. Like I wrote entirely for the joy of doing it. And when I finished, I just kind of put it in a drawer and was happy about it. And I'm basically still doing that. Like I'm just writing books that I really want to write. And then everything else, the editing, the release, the book coming out, the promotion, all that is of far, far lesser interest to me. Like, when I see people post like videos of them opening their new box of books, like it just doesn't even like compute to me. Like I get a box of my books and I'm like, oh great, and I put the box away. Just that element, some people I feel like, I talk to them, they don't really like writing, but they like having written and they like being a writer. And I'm sort of the opposite. I just really like writing.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
I'm hard pressed to not be writing. I want to write 7 days a week. I want to write nights and weekends and holidays.
Well, and you started early. You said you started when you were, how old were you when you first started?
Well, I mean, I started in like first grade, but
When did you know you wanted to do it professionally?
well, even when it was one of the major things that I did for fun, so that would have been like middle school and high school. I never, if you had asked me, what do you want to be when you are an adult, I would have said writer, but I didn't really think it was a legitimate job choice. I never really thought one could do it. I think today's life, careers in the arts seem much more possible, but like in those days, it would have been early 90s, pre-internet. Like if you lived in a rural town in Iowa like I did, there was no way. No one, you didn't know any artists. You didn't know anyone who knew any artists. Like it was so far from a reality that I never considered it really as something to pursue because I wouldn't know how. It'd be like saying, are you gonna live in a mansion and have a yacht? Well, it's like, how would I do that? I mean, I wouldn't know. I don't know how that is a reality. So yes, it's what I wanted to do, but no, I never considered it a realistic proposition.
So how did it actually happen?
Well, I wrote a book. So I
You
got
wrote a
it
full length, and you wrote a novella or a full length
full
novel.
length. So basically, I worked in filmmaking in my 20s. I'm just going to simplify it. Yeah. So in my 20s, I worked in like documentary film and I was a freelance writer for magazines and stuff. And I just got burnt out from it. And I sort of had strayed for the first time in my life for like those maybe 10 years. I had strayed away from prose writing. And I was like, that was always my first love. And I wonder if I should get back to it. And really, I'm part of it was just that I'm such a hermit. Like, I like to be alone. I like to work alone, and that all sounded very appealing to me. And I was still an avid reader, and so I said, "Let's try to write a book." And so I wrote a book, and I have no hard luck story. I wrote a book and I sold it. A Random House bought it, and then I just never stopped.
So an agent, an agent said, "Hey, I like what I'm seeing here. Send me the whole manuscript, read it. Hey, I think I can sell this." And is that the same agent you have today?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Now, you mentioned that you like to work alone, but you have collaborated
I know,
with some
so
big
weird.
names. Yeah, I mean, is collaboration, obviously it was successful for you. Is it something that was it difficult for you since? Yeah, I mean, one of the nice things about being a writer is you have 100% control over your copy. When you collaborate, it's a little different. So what was that experience like? And was it as enjoyable as writing alone, or what can you say without maybe offending a listener, a
Sure.
particular listener or two?
It's something I would have voted myself the least likely to write collaborations, and I've written a bunch, just because I really like working alone. But when Guillermo del Toro, calls you up and says, "Well, I want you to think about writing a book with me," you definitely consider it. And I did, and it was a cool experience. And what I've sort of discovered as I've done more of them is that collaborations have solved a need that I have, and it's the same need that makes me bounce around to different genres. It's that I don't want to do the same thing over and over again. And one of the greatest parts of collaboration for me is that it's hard. It's harder to collaborate in my experience than it is to write a book alone, because you're running up against someone who has their own ideas, their own thoughts, their own style, and it's causing friction, good friction. And it's the same reason I will hop genres, or the same reason that I'll decide I'm going to write a book in a totally different voice or point of view, or I'm not going to use punctuation or whatever little tricks I do to sort of keep myself alert. It's another one of those things that I can inject into my writing that's going to make me have to sit up and pay attention again. And it works towards the cause of never writing the same kind of thing twice.
Do you have a muse?
A muse.
Yeah. Is
I
there
don't.
anything, and I've heard a muse be anything from it could be a woman. It could be some kind of almost like an entity that visits at times that when you go into that special mode where you're really producing your highest form of copy and so on. What you obviously were a youngster who was driven to write, but is there anything that serves as a muse or an inspiration or a motivator, or is it just there?
I don't think it was people that I knew. I do know that I've been heavily, heavily influenced by George Romero and Rod Serling. Those are the two creators that I was introduced to really young, like 5 years old, 6 years old. And those two writer and directors, still, I feel like are heavily influencing me all the time. I have, in some ways, tried to model my career sort of after theirs. I've taken a lot of lessons from them, and both have done inspired me a lot. So I think that's as close as I get to a muse. I don't feel like I really have one though. And even when I think back to when I was a kid, what was powering me to write so much? Really nothing definite, certainly no definite person comes to mind. It was more just, it was almost like how some people do Sudoku puzzles or something. Like, it just was satisfying. It got my mind firing,
Right. So Twilight Zone and Rod Serling, classics. Are you familiar with the TV program, The Hitchhiker? You're familiar with that one too. A lot of people aren't for some reason. I know that everybody knows the Twilight Zone, but a lot of people it's like The Hitchhiker? What's that? Which of the books that you've written did you feel like you were most kind of in the jet stream, that you produced quickly, that the writing just came really, really fast? And was that, in my own experience, when something comes quickly, it's usually the best kind of stuff I write rather than struggling over it. Is that the case with you? And what really, maybe there's a title or two that in particular you felt like, wow, these just flowed.
Well, there's been a number of them that have gone really fast, and you're right, the faster it goes, the better it is. The one that really sticks out is I've got a two-volume set called The Death and Life of Zeglin Finch, And although it's two volumes, it was really written as one. It just is, it's was like 1500 pages. So just, it was just too big for a volume. And so it was split into two kind of early on. And, you know, I wanted the second one to come out 1 year after the first one. And so, and it's deeply historical. So just mountains and mountains of research. So to write, you know, a whatever it was, 700 page novel, quickly followed by an 800 page novel in a year, while, you know, writing the second one while doing the edits and copy edits of the first one and all that, was a marathon unlike I'll ever subject myself to again. You know, I was writing 12-hour days and
Wow.
certainly every single day for 2 years. And that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't on the wildest of rolls I've ever been on. Like, it just never stopped. Thousands of words a day, just and I guess I sort of subconsciously knew, or just outright knew, that there was no way I could pull it off unless I was moving this fast all the time. And with and the only way to do that is to convince yourself, even if it's not really true, that you've got absolute 100% confidence in what you're doing. And you'd have to kind of, again, even if it's artificial, kind of swell your head to pull off something like that. You got to make your head think, oh, I've got this. I've got this. I'm nailing this. It's your only hope not to self-doubt and to just write. So I've had other books that have been fast, but nothing quite at that, like, not a long distance run like that.
Right. So let's talk about your other novels in terms of your regimen. Is it, up at six, black coffee, sitting at the keyboard? How many hours do you have a word count you shoot for? There's a lot of different methods that people use. What's your work style?
It's in that vein. It's, you know, I get up, it varies depending on the day and kind of what's been happening the night before, but I don't know. I'm on average, I'm usually sitting at the computer by 8:30, something like that. So not like insanely early or anything like that. But I do work a full day. I do work a generally work a full 7 or 8 hour day. And I
How many
write.
breaks do you take? And do you do any of them? There's a method where, you write for 20 or 30 minutes, then you get up and you take a 10 minute break, and then you back for 20 or 30 minutes. Do you work that way, or is it just you work until you feel like I got to get up and take a break?
Yeah, I don't take many breaks. I break for lunch, you know. If I'm home alone, though, I'm probably eating in front of the computer. So yeah, I don't really take breaks. I you know, once an hour I try to, because I've had some eye trouble from staring at the screen so long. I try to relax my eyes once an hour and kind of look off into the distance and blink. But generally, I work straight through. And I
So
don't have
you
any rituals or anything like that, really.
gotcha. You live in Chicago, the Windy City. It's cold in the winter, which is great for writers. You can want to be indoors anyway. It's also a very energetic city. Does Chicago play into your writing at all? Not the subject matter, just in terms of, do you feel that it provides a kind of isolation and at the same time stimulation that helps put you kind of amplify your ability to write?
I think in a way, yeah. I don't, I mean, I love Chicago. I've been here a long time. I don't intend to ever leave. So this is, you know, not to be taken as any kind of slight on Chicago, because I love it here. But I think as long as I was in a city, I would be fine as a writer. I do want the intellectual stimulation of a city. I grew up in a very small town, and I just have no interest in doing that again. But specifically Chicago, no, I don't think there's anything. Like, if I lived in a place that was sunny and beautiful all year, I don't think that would affect my writing either. Like, I'm very diligent about getting in my 7
Yeah.
or 8 hours,
You're not lured
regardless.
to the beach by sunshine or anything of that
No,
sort.
nothing lures me except writing. That's what's when I'm doing anything else, that's the problem, is that I'm being lured back to writing again.
Right. Writers often talk about having a voice, and they sometimes spend years trying to figure out what their voice is, that inner voice that is their true voice. Now, you write a lot of different subject matter, different characters, and so on. So, do you feel that you have a voice, a distinctive voice that from book to book, somebody could say, "Oh, this is Daniel Kraus," if they didn't know who the author was? To some degree, be able to identify the tone of it. Do you feel like you've got a writer's voice, or do you feel like it's something that you just adapt to the task?
I don't have a specific, some writers I know have very specific writer's voice. Like you could throw a bunch of different pages from a bunch of different authors on the ground. You could pick up the page and know instantly just by like the syntax and the way they do their sentences and their oddball tendencies. You know instantly who it was. I'm not that distinct, and I do have some books that have just radically different styles, so I don't think you'd ever know it was me. But I do think I have a sensibility. I do think that if you've read several of my books and then you read one of these other ones that have very different voices, you could still identify, like, oh yeah, once you got into it, you say, okay, yeah, this has some Krausian elements that I'm recognizing. So yeah, I do think it's there. It's just not quite
So if somebody said, describe your voice, what adjectives would you apply?
it's so hard. And it's also hard to describe because I don't know. I mean, I know what I aspire to, and that's to, and I've always said this since like the first books I wrote, I want to write beautifully about terrible things. So that's what I hope people are getting from. I'm hoping that regardless of what's happening, that there's some sort of beauty in it. I'm really, really tied to sentences, and some people are tied to story more than sentences, so that when they read a book that has a great story, that's all that matters to them. And there's nothing wrong with that. Me, if I'm reading a book and the story is great, but there's just nothing special about the voice, I'm just not interested. Life's too
Yeah,
short.
I get you. Absolutely. Go ahead. Finish that thought.
I think that's it.
It's interesting you say that. Larry McMurtry would say it's all about the characters. You can have, a story is nice. This is nice. That's nice. But he said ultimately it's characters. For you, it's at that sentence level. I think for example, James Salter, a famous sentence writer, was at that sentence level. How did you say that again? I want to write beautifully about what?
Terrible things.
Terrible things. That's it. That's a great quote. Gotcha. Okay. The thing that motivates you in life is writing, clearly. But if you were to set writing aside for a minute, what else motivates you generally in life? Is there a thing or two you would point to that's motivating to you about living other than writing?
I mean, that's where I think I'm struggling in life. Like, writing is going really well for me, but I think there's going to come a time where I'm stricken by some illness or injury or something, and I'm just going to have to slow down, and that's when you have to have these other things, and I feel like I'm lacking them. There's obviously people I love and want to spend time with and all that stuff, but I'm th this is a weakness of mine. I am inspired by lots of things in the world and lots of art, but I generally funnel so much of that into writing. I'm
Yeah.
very single-minded in that way, which I think has been really good for the art, but I'm kind of dangling over a cliff a little bit. I think I need to find some way to enter other things into the equation.
So, interesting. So, true or false? Life is too quotidian for Daniel Krauss to be interested in writing about everyday things. So he ventures into other dimensions or imagined realities to be engaged enough to want to document it novelistically.
I would say false. I would say, most of my books have nothing supernatural in them. Most of them are they're horrible things that happen, obviously, but I love stuff that is dealing with just the minutiae of life. Most of my stuff isn't that, but I love reading that kind of stuff. I've probably written something in that vein. I'd have to look at my shelf. But no, I everything is I'm wide open to everything. I want to write something in every genre.
But something like Whale Fall is a spectacular event. That's a
Yeah,
spectacular
total.
event that would be on the evening news, and there'd be, I mean, if people actually knew what happened, there'd be a rescue attempt being made and so on. Pretty spectacular event. Not your everyday thing. I certainly wouldn't call it quotidian. So you do seem to find I mean that's part of sensational writing. I mean sensational in the good sense of the word,
And
not the
it's true.
pejorative sense.
I have found myself recently being like told that I'm a great high concept guy. And it's like I didn't really, I don't say this proudly, but I didn't really know what high concept even was till a few years ago. I always heard
What
people say
does it mean? I mean, I've heard it and I have
but
this
Whale Fall is the
conception, but not.
Whale Fall is the classic high concept. It's something that sells itself solely on the concept. Like even if that was the worst written book of all time, people would at least open it because the concept is so good. So apparently that's what I'm doing. But I love low concept too, or no concept. Like I would love to write a book that's just two people talking in a room for the entire book. And like that's a different kind of high wire act that I'm really interested in.
So kind of a My Dinner with Andre, but novel form, or no, novella form at some point maybe. Let me ask you what your greatest strength as a writer is, and you may have answered this, but I think in terms of the different capabilities writers have, some people are really good with pacing or characterization or dialogue, description. They create a real sense of place or mood. What would you say is your kind of your superpower among the writing tools?
Well, that's tough. I guess I would say description, I guess. Every once in a while I'll be reading a book and someone will just spend a paragraph talking about what the street looks like, and it'll take my breath away. Like I'll be like, oh my God, this is what it's all about. Like literally nothing is happening here, but if you're good enough, nothing can be everything. So I get real excited about description and trying to, again, it kind of goes into writing beautifully about terrible things. It's like, can I take anything and sort of, make it gorgeous and heartbreaking, even if it's just a newspaper on the ground or something. Like that's a sort of every sentence endeavor that is really satisfying to me. Like I think some people are just out to and again this is fine too. I want to see the plot mechanisms work. I want to see how I'm going to write so that everything comes together and then the plot all works out and everything comes into play, and I do that too, and I enjoy that. But what really gets me going is just the sentences. Like how can I write the a sentence that you don't know where it's going, you're not expecting, and you can't guess what the next sentence is. And that's the stuff that really gets me going. And that's why I think it's why I kind of am so prolific, is I don't get stymied or bummed out or writer blocked on almost anything because I'm so interested in just the next few words.
How much of your writing is plotted versus organic or freeform writing?
It varies on project. Every once in a while, I have a project that I very specifically and pointedly don't plan out. But generally, I plot out quite a bit because what it, in a way, it's getting back to that same thing. I want things out of my way so that I can focus on the sentences. And so I found that, and this seems counterintuitive to some degree, that if I extensively plot out a book, and I know that if I'm on point, F, I know what point G is going to be. That frees me up to really just go wild with the writing, because I sort of know the next stop, and between those two stops, I can just freestyle and just like because I know that the safety net is there that at the end of this chapter or whatever, I'm gonna end up at that next, stone in the river. So generally, I'm a big plotter.
So plotting is not antithetical to organic writing, then in your view. You create the plot and an outline, a strong outline that gives you the freedom to, but it's got some parameters there that you would bump up against, and it kind of keeps you in the channel, but at the same time, you're creating freedom for yourself.
Yeah, that's why it's counterintuitive. I think people think, oh, if you plot, it's going to be dead. I suppose for some people that may be true. But for me, if I plot, it gives me ultimate freedom to just, I don't have to, my sit down, my brain doesn't have to be thinking about the gears of the plot moving. Like I've already built the car in a sense. Now I'm just styling the car and I can just go crazy. And that's what's fun on a day-to-day basis. So I spend the weeks or months that it takes to plot a book, which is not the fun part for me. I don't think I'm bad at it. I've got some pretty intricate plots, but that's not the fun
That's
part.
not the joy.
I'm building the scaffolding so that I can have fun.
Right. How wild do you go with the writing? Because I think, I mean, my impression is writers in general, novelists in general, have a difficult time really cutting loose. They tend to almost feel that there's the internal censor that we talk about so much, that makes them pass judgment on every phrase and sentence rather than just letting it go and then, taking that second, third, and fourth bite at the apple later. So, I mean, do you feel that you truly exercise a lot of freedom in your writing, and you don't self-judge everything you're doing along the way?
No, I definitely don't self-judge.
You definitely do or don't.
Don't. That
Okay.
will come later, like when I get like an editorial letter that tells me I've done a whole bunch of things wrong or whatever. Like that's not fun. And then you have to really do some hard, crunchy thinking.
Wait, you're a bestseller. You're a best-selling author. You have movies, TV, books. For somebody to come back to you and say, "Oh, Daniel, you this one's really, this isn't working." There's got to be a part of you or a part in them that, can I really say this to this guy when he's been had this kind of success?
Well, I definitely want everyone to say what they feel. That doesn't mean I'll necessarily do what they say. Like I've never had an editor that, at the end of the day wasn't of the opinion, this is your book, your name is going on this book. I'm not going to bend on anything I feel strongly about. But generally, an editor will say a bunch of things, and some of them you won't agree with, and I just ignore. But there's always some stuff that's really insightful, and so you make hay of what you can.
What about do you have a preference for TV, movies, books? It sounds like first and foremost you're a book writer, but how do you feel about writing television scripts or movie scripts?
It's all very different. I'm definitely a novelist first and will always be. That's just, all this texture that I'm talking about basically doesn't exist in scripts. which are really plot engines. So those can be really fun. They feel to me more like puzzles, and they move so much more quickly. It doesn't take as long to write them. I'm talking about TV and film scripts as well as comic scripts. They're just generally, they just move much more quickly, and they're, I don't know, I feel weird saying they're just easier, but in a way they are kind of just easier. They just don't take as long, not even in the slightest. So yeah, I really enjoy doing them, and they're really challenging in a totally different way. They just take, nothing takes as long as a novel. Just novels are just long haul endeavors, and sort of naturally built for the long haul.
You're a marathoner.
Yeah, but I really like scripting. It's a great palate cleanser, you know. I think a novel is a great palate cleanser for a script, and vice versa. I've always really, it's another thing I like about working on different kind of projects is that, you know, if I'm writing a book for kids followed by a real intense adult book, that's a great switch up. If I'm writing a screenplay and then go to a novel, that's a great turnaround. These turns are really helpful to keep me sort of on the ball.
So are you always writing? I mean, when you finish Whalefall and you turn it in and it's like, wow, great. We're sending it to the presses, you know, the editors have copy edited and so on. Do you ever just say to the wife, you know, let's head to the beach, take a couple weeks and you're not writing? Do you ever or do you have downtime? Do you take breaks in between books,
No.
or is that like holding your breath if you do that?
At this point, you know the answer. There's
You
no.
got to keep it. Okay, so let
Literally,
me ask
when
you
I
this.
fit.
If you went to a dinner party or any event, when you come home, do you ever write about, this is something I think Bret Easton Ellis does, you know, with the shards and Less Than Zero and all that. We'll go to something. He didn't say it explicitly, but we'll go to something and then comes home and basically starts writing about what happened, the character, like starts fictionalizing to some degree what happened.
No, I don't do that.
That's not your thing.
No,
Okay.
but I've always got, you know, I always have my notebooks with me, and you know, every
When an
day.
idea comes, you'll scribble it down.
Yeah, every day I write something down in those notebooks. Whether it's through a conversation or a movie or whatever, like something is filtering in that I'm picking out and sifting out and remembering for later.
So you have an idea for a novel. Do you first test that idea by putting the plot and characters into action, hacking away at it to see if there's real momentum there and you've got a real feel for it in advance of saying, "Hey, I'm going to write this novel in earnest"?
I've done it different ways. Sometimes I'll sell a book on just a proposal, where I've written nothing, and I just have to sort of jump in and hope that I figure it out. And I usually I always have. But sometimes, and I've heard this from other writers too, you have an idea, you sort of chew over it for a while mentally. And then you, before I will spend a lot of time outlining it, I'll give it sort of a test drive. Like I'll write the first, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, X number of pages just to see if it's flowing. Like, do I actually enjoy writing this? And that's the best way to do it, because then if I've written 20 pages and they're just cooking, then I've got some fuel to do the dirty work that I don't want to do, which is to plot it all out. But I can plot that now with the wind at my back of having kind of figured out what the voice is, and having the good feeling of knowing that it was working.
Is there anything going on around you when you're writing? Is there music? Do you ever use anything, whether it's caffeine or, you know, in Silicon Valley, the hot thing is microdosing with LSD or psilocybin. Do you do anything to anything going on around you, whether it's music or some kind of a very mild intoxicant?
Lots of music, always music, 100% of the time. Usually loud.
Usually loud. Okay. Stephen King does that too, blast hard rock. So if your writing style, I want to talk to you more about music, but if your writing style were a musical genre, what would it be?
Oh, geez. I mean, that's just a question I've never considered.
What do you listen to?
I feel like my writing style would just be something like classical. I like to think it's kind of complicated and
So loud classical music. You don't want lyrics while you're writing. Is
oh
that right?
no, I'm saying that's my writing style. What I listen
Oh,
to is
okay.
virtually everything. Almost anything. I can't think of anything I won't listen to. And yes, I can have lyrics if I know the music well and things are going really well with the book. Like if I'm just cooking along, then I can listen to music with lyrics.
What does the music do for you? And why loud? Does it raise your energy level?
Yeah, that must be it. And to answer your other question, yeah, I'm usually fairly caffeinated in the mornings anyway. Yeah, I guess I've never thought about it, but it must just raise my energy level. And it's not always like fast music. It's not hard necessarily has to be hard charging music. Even if it's soft music in the sense of, it gentle music, I still like to play it loud. I just sort of like it to things that kind of creates a bubble around me a little bit.
Yeah. So even if you were listening to, the Zen channel on Pandora, you'd play it loud.
Yeah,
And
generally.
yeah. Interesting. So what about reading? You must read, of course. What does reading do for your writing? And how much time do you actually devote to reading?
Yeah, it's a good question too. Primarily, my reading takes place at night. So I read, I would say 75% of my reading is before I go to bed. And I've been doing that since I was a little kid, I just that's probably very common. Then occasionally, if I'm really enjoying something, I'll find other places to read. Of course, if I'm traveling, I'll be reading a lot more on the plane, or if I'm in some sort of transit, those are all great times to read.
What is what does it do for your writing? I mean, how much does reading feed writing? I mean, obviously from your past, but you've learned the craft, you know the craft. So at this stage of your life, how does reading play into your writing?
Well, sometimes it plays into it by design. I read a lot of nonfiction. I do a lot of research for my books. I over research generally. So easily half of the things I read are related to what I'm writing. So sometimes it's necessary to read those books before I write because I need to learn something. Other times it's just like I'm writing this World War I novel right now. So there are some things I needed to read before I wrote it, but even as I'm writing it, I'm reading things about the war, just because sometimes things will pop up that will I can identify as something I can use or can somehow influence it. Fiction is fuzzier. I don't think novels influence my novels very much. I don't. At least in not a way I can quantify. I don't feel like I find myself taking a lot of notes in those notebooks I referred to earlier when I'm reading a novel. I'm sure they influence me in some sort of subconscious way. For some reason, I feel like I'm almost more influenced by movies. I don't know why, but I feel like the motor memory of writing notes when taking in art, I feel like I do that more often when I'm watching movies. I'll suddenly have an idea and it'll inspire something. I don't know why that is.
Do you consider yourself a visual writer in the writing process? In other words, while you're thinking about the next sentence, do you actually see yourself in that environment, your character in that environment, or is it straight to the, kind of the hieroglyphics? I mean, right to the letters and the words.
I'm not sure. I think my books are generally vi visual. I mean, that's what I've been told. I don't know if I really, visualize myself in environments like that. I don't think I do.
If it's happening, it sounds like it's happening at a really subtle level, since you're
Yeah.
not sure about that. So writing obsesses you, obviously. Well, is there anything else that obsesses you? For example, something you mentioned earlier, I'm not sure if this is an obsession, but you had mentioned concern that you just weren't going to be able to write anymore. What else would I do with my life? I mean, the good news is writing you can do really to your last breath.
Yeah, right.
Generally, I mean, it's even be hell, somebody could cut your hands off and you could still do it verbally, just dictate or whatever. So is there something that obsesses you outside of the writing?
Kind of. I mean, I think I definitely get obsessed with individual projects, and so that's why I end up working on them so intensely, is I and to me that's if I don't get obsessed with what I'm writing about, that's a bad sign. That means I'm just not very interested in it, and I shouldn't be writing it. But more on a larger scale, I don't think I'm upset. I don't feel
You
like I'm
you're not an obsessive person, you don't feel, other than the writing.
no I'm not an obsessive person. Like if you were to look around my house, it's not like you would find, here's my collection of this or that. Like I don't have that urge to collect or organize, or I just it I'm a the opposite of whatever an opposite of a hoarder is. That's what I am. Like
Well,
I
you're a
want
minimalist. You're a
I'm a
minimalist.
minimalist. That's it. I generally am a minimalist. So that sort of, I think, means I'm not obsessed with much.
You're not trying to hold on to things, and you're free to let them go. No, I get it. I always feel the fewer things I own, the happier I feel. So I get that. Let me ask you a personal question about your marriage. I mean, you're married, but you write a lot. Writers tend to be in their heads. With my own wife, there's times when I just feel like she, well, I hear her just say, "Are you listening to me?" And it's
Yeah.
like, because you're lost in your own thoughts, where writers tend to be insular. Do you find yourself in a situation where, your wife is saying, "Gee, it would be nice to spend some time with you today." You're spending all your time with the laptop. Or just that, we're together, but I feel like you're somewhere else.
I definitely hear that sometimes. The good news is I'm not precious about my writing sort of situation. So I'm up here and my music's on, but my door is always open, and it doesn't, she comes in whenever she wants. And I'm not weird about being interrupted or anything like that. So it's so I see her all the time. Like she'll just wander into the office about this or that, and that it doesn't present any problems in the way that I write.
So, is it music that you're listening to, the loud music? Are you using headphones, earbuds, or are you playing through speakers and she can hear the music too?
I'm playing through speakers, but we do have, I'm on the second story, and when she's home, she's usually on the first story. So there's not, it doesn't present much of a problem.
Now, if you could go back in time and see, 15-year-old Daniel Krauss, what would you tell him about? I mean, he's already writing well into the writing. What would you tell him in terms of a piece of advice or just a statement that you would make to your 15-year-old self? What would you say?
Well, I guess, I mean, mostly I would leave him alone, because I think his weird process of writing and showing it to no one ended up being really key to how I've worked in my career. It, once you're writing just for the joy of writing, like everything else slides off, and a lot of the anxieties that my writer friends have, I don't think I have very badly, because I'm not super concerned about things like reviews or a lot of these external feedbacks you get. I'm really so just entirely concerned with, am I enjoying the process of writing? So I think that is really smart. I think it's something that a young writer today is almost really is probably not going to get. There's just so many ways now to share your writing. And I don't think that's generally a bad thing, but I do think it there's a danger, you know, if you start at pretty young age writing in a realm that has any kind of voting to it, like thumbs up or thumbs down, or this is better than this, it's going to push you to the middle of the Venn diagram. And I was so isolated that I was able to foster a style. Like I was able to create something I think unique because I was so alone in what I was doing. I think I if I could change anything, I guess I would tell him that you really can make a living as a writer or you can be published. I just that was so far out of the cards for me, that you know I certainly spent time taking classes in college, for example, towards careers that I was never going to get involved in, just because I felt like I was supposed to. So I could have at least saved myself some boring classes.
What is the biggest writing lesson you learned along the way? Was there something that happened that was kind of a breakthrough for you where you just realized, ah, if I do it this way, I'm much more creative or productive or I can work faster?
Yeah, you know, it might be outlines. Like, it wasn't until maybe my fourth or fifth book that I settled into a pattern of how to create outlines that worked for me. Like, if you go back, so my first book I had no outline. If you go back to the outline of my second book, Rotters, like it's just a disaster. Like, I clearly don't know how to make one, and I'm making all these weird timelines and, I've got these outlines that are literally cut into pieces and reassembled with tape, and it's just like I'm trying to reinvent a wheel like that. I just don't know what I'm doing. Now I really understand. I have a process now, and although I can vary from it in strategic ways for certain effects, generally I have a process. I know how it works. There's a sort of safety element to that. I know I'm going to be able to, it allows me to sort of estimate, you know, how long it might take me to write a book. In the sort of on the business side of it, it's very helpful because it's, there's a certain pattern to it. You know, although I like to write as wildly as possible, there's a part of me that's very factory-like. Like I want to clock into my writing factory with my certain tools that I have and execute. So yeah, it's that mix, I think.
You know, you mentioned that you seem to be more influenced by movies than the novels you read. So what are you streaming and watching on Netflix and other streaming channels these days? What shows are you watching? Shows or movies?
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of shows.
You stick
And
with
part of,
movies. Okay.
yeah,
Why is that? You're not the first person to say this, but
shows, I don't, again, I feel like life is almost too short for shows. Like, you
too many
know,
seasons.
yeah, you're just gonna, so much time is gonna get sucked away. And not that I don't have appreciation for long form projects, having done some myself, but, I
Well,
don't want.
what's the best or favorite movie you've seen in the last couple of years? Or maybe give us a couple.
I'm trying to think. Last couple of years, I don't. I see. I watch so many movies. I saw this great, I don't know what you call it, sort of a noir film from 19 mid-50s called Dementia. That it was way ahead of its time, and it's there's no dialogue in it. It's a noir film without dialogue, and it's just amazing. So that'd be a really great find. But yeah, I watch very little shows, very few shows, because I want this constant new input. Like I want my brain, a lot of what I do in my life, I think it's arranged around not allowing my brain to fall into any ruts. That's why I want a different movie all the time instead of a next episode of a show, or that's why I'm changing genres, or that's why I'm working with collaborators. I'm in a constant battle with my brain to keep it always on its toes in a way.
So, the thing about listening to you, Daniel, is sound you it sounds like the writing comes so easy to you. There are people who struggle so much with writing, and I guess part of it is that you really want to write. It's something that you would rather write than do anything else. And I think there's many writers out there that kind of force themselves to write. They want to be writers, but that's not necessarily something that is the preferred activity of their day. When you're in the actual writing process, is there a state of mind that you're in? Again, you do it so often and so much, I'm not sure whether I'm just reminded of when Stephen King said in his book on writing that you have to come to the screen with an attitude. Do you do that?
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier when I was talking about Zebulon Finch. Like you have to almost convince yourself that you're some sort of badass who's definitely got this. That's the only way to, otherwise you're going to be plagued with doubts probably. So I have to, and there are times for doubts, as I said, sort of later on in the process, but I don't want to feel any of that when I'm actually writing. Like when I'm writing that first draft, it's all about attitude. I want
So
to come.
you're aggressive. You're aggressive with the
Yes.
writing.
Yes, very much. I want to pounce on it, and I want to sort of take big swings and big risks, and feel
You
good
can always
about it.
scale back later. Yeah. You can always scale back if you've gotten extravagant, over the top extravagant, I mean. What are you working on now that you can tell us? Do you talk about what your next project, and without a lot of writers are superstitious and all that, but without giving anything away you're not supposed to give away at this point?
Yeah, I can talk about things that have been announced. Basically, that's the rule of thumb. As I said, right now I'm working on this book called Angel Down, which takes place in World War I. And it's about a sort of group of soldiers in the waning weeks of the war who find an angel that has been shot down by kind of the high-flying artillery of the war. And at first there's this sense that they've found something miraculous, but it actually draws out the opposite in them. They sort of become possessive and jealous and suspicious of each other, and this sort of angel begins kind of tearing them apart. So it has almost the opposite effect that you would think it would be. So that's been really fun. I'm writing that in a very unique style. I don't want to specifically talk about what I'm doing, but again, it's a approach I've never tried before. And one that I worked on the first, I don't know, 50, 75 pages over and over, feeling that it was fine, but it wasn't, making my pulse race at all. And then finally came upon a sort of stylistic idea that just changed everything. Now I'm just writing like the wind. And it's cool. It's in my sweet spot of like, I said I really like doing research, and so I'm kind of surrounded by my World War I texts and notes and books, and just he's just really enjoying it. Yeah.
What's your completion target?
Completion target. Well, I do have a due date from the publisher. I don't remember what it is, but as of now, I'm in no danger of not making it. So
It's 2024.
the book will come out in 2025. So, yes, I'll be fine.
But you'll turn
Yeah.
it in at
Yeah.
during
Yeah.
this year.
It, yeah. It, oh, yeah. It's like mid-years, somewhere mid-years, my due date.
Interesting. Last question, Daniel. You're still a young man. Even though you have these standout accomplishments, you're still young. How do you think your writing will change as you age? Do you think it will change as you get older? Or do you feel that that's something that's going to be a constant?
Yeah, it'll change. It's always changed. I can kind of look at my shelf of books here and kind of see different things. I think because I'm constantly trying to reinvent sort of my styles, that suggests that there's going to be changes, and there's got to be through lines in those changes that maybe I'm not the best person to see them. I'm obviously too close to them, but I'm sure somebody, if they were doing a study on me, could say, all right, there's you look at his first 10 years, and there's certain concerns and styles that shift in his next 10 years or whatever. I have no doubt that's happening. I expect, I don't know what I expect, but I want to keep on trying new things. I really do want to keep expanding genres. There's still a number of genres I haven't written in, and I've got ideas for many of them.
What are those genres? Can you name a couple of them?
There's a Western I've been wanting to write. Just have to figure out when. And with all ideas, for me, I'm always waiting for the spark that sets them off. Like, usually it's like a cross of something. Like, I have the premise, but I'm waiting for the character, or I have, something like that. I'm waiting for the second thing. And there's a second thing I haven't kind of hit upon with the Western yet, but Western is one of them. As weird as it sounds, I'd kind of like to write something in the romance realm, which arguably I touched upon with Shape of Water. So that's not like super out of the pocket for me, but certainly not something people are really expecting. So those are a couple of them. The one genre I can't wrap my brain around, I don't think I'll ever write one, it's just sort of classic fantasy, like dragons and castles. Like, for some reason, that just does those that genre does not resonate with me.
I hear you. I hear you. I just wanted to finish by asking, who is the quintessential? I mean, the quintessential Daniel Krauss. If you were to kind of summarize yourself as a, you've already given so much of yourself here, Daniel. I'm just wondering if there's anything that either people would be surprised to know about you, or you would say is kind of who you are at the core.
I don't know. I mean, I think I've always wanted to be seen as someone who works hard, and I think clearly, I think that has gotten th through. I think that I don't have to be on a single interview for just people to see the output. And I think that's just like must come from Iowa upbringing, like where. Or hell, even American upbringing. Like, you just want to be valued for your work, which is maybe not the best thing in the world. Like, there are other things besides work. But somehow, clearly, part of that ethic has gotten hammered into my brain. There are people who can, I'm sure, outthink me and outwrite me, but I like to think there's no one who can outwork me. I don't know. I don't know that statement, I think, used to be enough for me, and now it feels a little empty, when I say it now. So again, it's another thing that's making me think that I need to pause to some respects and kind of like regroup a little bit, which is hard for me to do because I don't expressly feel like it. Like, because I'm running along with these projects and it feels really good. But I'm sure if I had a therapist, they would probably be like, hey, You need to slow down. You don't need to have three books come out every year. Regroup sort of, and think about what else there is. So I sort of flew around your question there, but anyway, that's an answer.
Daniel, thanks for coming on the program. I really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks.